winter just leave? But let's talk some baseball and warm ourselves up just by having the conversation. Opening day is here. The Blue Jays open up this afternoon shortly after 4 Eastern in St. Louis against the Cardinals. To help tee it up for us from Post Media covers the Blue Jays, it's Rob Longley. Rob, good morning. How are you?
Good, guys. Happy opening day.
Outstanding. This is the first. I didn't realize this, Rob, but this is the first time MLB's done this since 1968. Where every team plays on opening day. Like, opening day is true opening day, because oftentimes, sometimes you start the season over in Japan or and you bleed it out a little bit. Do you like this? Let's have everybody going on the same day.
Yeah, I think that it feels like a real opening day, right? Like, this idea of having one or two games as an opening day, and then the next day it's opening day, and then the next day it's home opener. Like, why not have a real celebration of the game coming back? And you know, with all the changes in the rules and, you know, the excitement around the game right now, baseball is in a reasonable place. So why not kick it off in style the way they're doing it this year? I like it.
As you said, before we get to the Jays, which will be most of our conversation, you bring up the new rules. Have you been a fan of them, having been able to watch them be enforced in spring training?
Yeah, TJ, I think it's been a bit of a learning curve, of course. Like, umpires, players, pitchers, catchers, managers, everybody's been adjusting. But to me, like, the nuances of it all will be sorted out. But the big thing, the big game for everybody is going to be the pitch clock and the fact that we're not going to have nowhere near as many three-hour games. And in fact, we're going to have some games that are over in 2 hours and 5 minutes and 2 hours and 10 minutes. And that's the way the game has just gotten silly with how long it was taking to play. I mean, I didn't go back through every game last year, but I could tell you that the Jays averaged over 3 hours a game. And there were a lot of nights where a regular nine-inning game would be 3 hours and 24 minutes. And,
yeah.
And that's just silliness. It's unnecessary.
Yeah.
So the pitch clock is really going to help things. I think there's going to be a sorting out factor in some of the other rules, and it'll be interesting to see how it shakes down.
As it pertains specifically to the Jays, do you think that it's going to be a bigger challenge for anybody on their staff, or will everybody just kind of, hey, it's the new reality and here we go?
I think most guys have adapted to it quite well. They were certainly very diligent. I was down at spring training for a while, and the drills that they were going through daily, and a lot of them pertaining to the new rules, whether it be pitch clock or some of the other stuff, you know, they're ready for it. Alejandro Kirk has had a little bit of trouble with the pitch clock, but he was a late arrival to camp. And but you know, once you get in the heat of all of this, they'll sort it out pretty quickly. But and I think my sense anyway is that the Jays are going to try to be creative and find ways to push the envelope a little bit and maybe use some of these new rules to their advantage. I wouldn't be surprised if you see a guy like Alec Manoah or Chris Bassett quick throw every once in a while, so even faster than the pitch clock. And I think the Jays are going to be very aggressive on the base pass, and I think they're going to try to rattle pitchers and sort of throw their timing off and take advantage of the pitch clock that way. So I think there are ways that tactically the rules can be used to help the team, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Blue Jays are among the league leaders in trying that.
Rob Longley from Post Media covers the Jays is joining us. And Rob, I've heard this from many people that, you know, that cover the Jays. The common word I hear the most about the offseason is versatile. What they've done, they bring in Varsho. He can play everywhere, right? He can steal your bases as well. You know, they bring in Bassett, another quality arm there as well. Kiermaier is their new center fielder. And Belt can spell and play some first base. Going to be their DH. He's a left bat here. Do you think the Jays, when they looked at it, how much did they look at, let's take advantage of what we think the new rules will mean to the game and let's build our roster? And also sometimes, you know, the ballpark's a little bit different this year, right, in the outfield. Do you think they weighed both of those factors? Let's maybe suit our park a little bit more, what we think that's going to be, and the rule changes?
Yeah, I suspect that they did all of that and more. This is a very very progressive front office, and they're very into the analytics and very into looking for new ways to evolve their game. But I think a lot of it was to overcome some of what were clear shortcomings last year. They They weren't very consistent defensively enough, and that cost them some games. They weren't always very smart on the base pass, and that maybe prevented them from scoring runs and cost them some games. And they weren't versatile enough in the batting order. They didn't have enough left-handed bats. Now they do, and now they have guys that they can move in and out of it. And as Matt Chapman was talking a little bit about this yesterday, you know, he said the way the lineup was last year, facing mostly righties, a pitcher could get in a real groove with that Toronto batting order. Now there's all kinds of different things that they can throw at you, including guys coming off the bench in situations. So I think they're going to be, obviously they've lost some of the firepower that they had with losing Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez, but they're going to be a more versatile offense, I think, and they're going to be more aggressive on the bases. So it's kind of an old school approach, I think, in one sense, in that they're going to really look at manufacturing runs. And that's not something that this team necessarily did over the last 3 years. They just bombed runs. They didn't, they didn't chip away at you and try to win games that way. So the blend of those two facets of an offense on a roster makes it really intriguing to see how it's all going to shake out.
It just seems to me, and I'll go back to the last season as well, but really this offseason, building this roster feels a little old school to me. And baseball, what wins, right? Pitching and defense. How much is, like, you look at their defense and how much it's improved. Like, bringing Chapman in, who's outstanding. Vladdy's become a very good first baseman. And then now you're bringing in Kiermaier. Springer moves to right. Varsho is an excellent defensive player. Like, with the outfield, let's start there. Does this have a chance to be the best defensive outfield in baseball?
Yeah, I think, you could probably say going into the season is that on paper they are that. And these guys, you talk to them and they say, we want our pitchers to know that every time there's a ball in the air, we're going to get to it. Mm-hmm. And, obviously that's not entirely possible. I mean, line drives are going to beat you. But these guys could cover a lot of ground. They all have wheels. I think Springer is going to be good for him to be out in right field, a position that he's played a fair bit in his career, by the way. But that'll may take a little bit of pressure off of him physically. Kiermaier has been one of the best defensive center fielders in the game for a long time, obviously injured last year and was battling a bad hip the year before that, but he had off-season hip surgery, and all he's done in spring training is fly, whether it's on the base paths or out in center field. And Varsho, man, I think fans are going to love this guy, man. He's really good out there at left, and I think he's going to bring a little bit of a dynamic approach to the offense. Anybody you ask about him, say, hey, this guy's a real gamer. So he's a real competitive guy, and that mindset really fits in with what is sort of a new attitude around this team this year.
Is anything short of winning the division a disappointment for this group this year?
I don't know if I would go that far, Chris, because obviously the American League East is one of the toughest divisions in baseball. Yeah. But having said that, I mean, that is their clear objective going into it. They obviously massive disappointment in the way the last two seasons ended. 2021, they missed by a game on the last day of the season. And last year, being forced to go the wild card route, sure they had it at home, but so much of playoff baseball can be luck related, and in a 2 out of 3 game series, you're really at the whims of the baseball gods. So their mindset and their objective is to win the division and take that out of the equation, get a bye and get into a proper playoff round and do some damage that way. I wrote a column the other day, and I actually firmly believe this, that 100 wins is not out of the question for this team if things go right for them. And that would be a franchise record. They've never had 100 wins before. 99 is the record, but for the first time in history, they've had back-to-back seasons where they've won more than 90, and this is a better team than it was last year with a balanced schedule. They don't have to play the American League East as much as they did in the past, and if all this work on details results in 4 or 5 more wins, and if this pitching staff is better leads to 2 or 3 more wins, well, all of a sudden you're up at 98 or 99, and 99 is what won the division last year with the New York Yankees. So while it's a bold prediction, I could actually see it happening because this team is, in the 6 years that I've been around it, this team is far more business-like than any version I've seen.
and maybe the kind of touchstone for that more business-like, the decision was made to retire the home run jacket. Is that somewhat symbolic, Rob, as to being, you know, more business-like this season?
Yeah, I think so. I spoke to Bo Bichette about it the other day, and he said, you know, like he said, whatever. It's like we didn't lose games because of the home run jacket, but he said the worst thing in the world was to have to put that thing on when you hit a home run to make the score 8-2, to pull within 6 runs of the other team in the seventh inning, and you got to put that thing on. He said, like, come on, it's just, it's time to move on from it. You know, it's a little bit of the old cliche, act like you've been there before. And it's not like this team's not going to have fun, but the way John Schneider, the manager, put it to me was, you know, baseball's fun, but one of the most fun things about baseball is winning. So let's celebrate more than a home run. You know, let's celebrate doing the little things that help us win a game. We'll celebrate home runs too, but we don't have to bring out a jacket every time we do one.
Right now, what do you think is the going to be the most significant change, addition, whatever, for them going into this season? What are you most interesting to see how it affects their fortunes?
I think two things, CJ. I think Chris Bassitt intrigues me a lot, the guy that the new pitcher they got. I mean, this guy's got like 9 different pitches. And if he can be a really strong number 3 behind Manoa and Gausman, all of a sudden you've got one of the best front ends of rotation in the American League. And then you sort of hope that Berríos comes back. Obviously, terrible season for him last year. But maybe, I mean, he was the opening day starter in 2022, and it was a disaster from the opening inning and the rest of the way through the season. Maybe being the fourth guy, maybe that taking that pressure off him will allow him to be at least a credible starter that you can get 5, 6, and maybe occasionally 7 innings out of. And the same with Yusei Kikuchi. If you can get the same from him at the back end of it, then all of a sudden you've got a really, really deep rotation. But also the bullpen. I think the bullpen, I think it's going to be a lot stronger than it was last year. I don't think the Jays are yet to the point where a lot of the best bullpens are and that there's a ton of swing and miss. But you do have it with Romano. You do have it with Jimmy Garcia if he's anywhere near what he was throwing in spring training. I think the new guy, Eric Swanson, the guy they got in the Teoscar Hernandez trade, is going to be a real valuable addition to that bullpen. And I really think that at some point, probably not too long, we're going to see Nate Pearson back up there, and we're going to see him, you know, bring in the heat from the bullpen. He was, his last outing in spring training, I think he had 11 pitches that he topped 100 miles an hour. And now he's always done that, but he seems to be doing it with a better, with more movement on his fastball and with a better pitch mix. So I think this pitching staff from top to bottom has the potential to be significantly better than it was last season, both from the starting guys and the bullpen.
I just have a couple more for you. I want to ask you about Vladdy, who had a tremendous season 2 seasons ago. It wasn't like it was a terrible season last season, but he expected more of himself. A tough act to follow with the year he had the year before. And I always find baseball, I love that it's a team sport, but it comes down to for batters, the individual matchups. And when you see a young guy bust out like Vladdy did a couple of years ago, sometimes there's an adjustment because now everybody adjusts to you. Now it's your turn. How do you adjust the year after? So what do you expect from Vladimir Guerrero?
Well, I would put it this way. I expect Vlad Guerrero Jr. to be more like Vlad Guerrero Jr. again and not like Vlad Guerrero Sr. Hmm. And by that I mean he was a really patient and disciplined hitter in 2021 when he hit 48 home runs and was an MVP finalist. Last year, he was like the old man. He was chasing. He was chasing bad swings, and he lacked some of that some of that discipline at the plate. And he told me in spring training that is his focus this year, to not go after those bad pitches. Because once the book's out that you're gonna chase this, then everybody's going to throw it at you. And you could just see it at times last season when he was incredibly frustrated at the stuff he was getting and the way that he was swinging at it. And if he can lock in the way that he did 2 years ago and not be like the old man, I think he could have another big season. And, you know, I think it'll be maybe somewhere between the 32 and 48 home runs that he's had the past 2 seasons, but closer to the 2021 version where he was dominant at times. And I really think that this offense goes the way that Vlad Guerrero Jr. goes. If he starts producing, then everybody else around him gets better as well. And a big Vlad season could be a huge season for this offense, and may make us forget about Teoscar Hernandez in a hurry.
All right, and very last one for you. We've talked about pace of play. We're all looking forward to shorter games here. But in your opinion, what are you looking forward to the most with the various tweaks to the rules in-game, like bite size here, like more balls in play, and just pace of play as we're watching the game unfold and not just looking at, hey, it's shorter at the end here. What are you most looking forward to, you know, maybe kind of from a fan perspective because you love baseball, how things could change?
Definitely balls in play, right? We need more action in the game. It has just been, you know, too many fly balls, too many strikeouts, not enough runners on base, not enough movement on the base pass. All that's going to change. I think you're going to see teams be way more aggressive running, and I think you're going to see way more balls in play without the shift. And you know, even in Toronto, we haven't seen it completed yet, but the new confines, the way that the walls are built in the outfield, I think you're going to see some quirkiness there where it's higher in some spots and lower in other spots. And I think it's all designed, in part anyways, to get more balls in play. And I think, you know, critics and especially young new fans coming to baseball and seeing the dreadfully long games with precious little action, it was a turnoff. And to their credit, baseball recognized that and figured that the main motivation of these rule changes should be not just to pick up the pace of play, but to improve the action, to have more balls in play.
Yeah, here, absolutely. Really appreciate your time here. Are you ready? You only have 162 to go. Okay, you ready?
Yeah, you know what? I think this is my sixth or seventh opening day, but it's gonna be really cool because, as you guys know, St. Louis is a pretty good sports town, but it's a really hardcore baseball town. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole Midwest has had an affinity for the Cardinals for decades, and you can just feel it walking around town last night. There's a real buzz, and the place is going to be full today, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of ceremony. The Budweiser Clydesdales are a big part of the show, of course, for Cardinals opening day. Yeah, so I think it's going to be a real good vibe down there today and for the rest of the series, and it's going to be kind of neat for the Jays to be part of that sort of a opening day festival.
All right, we're not too far away, just over 4 hours away from the first pitch of the season for the Jays. Alek Manoah gets the opening day start. Rob, always appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us for the tee-up today.
My pleasure, guys. See you.
Add it to my tab, Rob.
All right. Growing.
Yep. Yes, it is.
Oh, you'll be paid in beer, annoying CJ, which is fine, I'm sure. Right, yeah. Rob Longley joining us from Post Media from St. Louis here. And, couldn't agree more. If the game gets back to the way he just described it, it'll get back to, it's going to pull me back in.
Yeah.